Morning.
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
All right.
I'm going to say that once. I was listening to our podcast and I noticed that I always say, I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. I'm one away from all right, all right, all right. Maybe I got to come up with a standard greeting, kind of my catchphrase.
I find that the vast majority of the time these days, I say I'm doing great. And I remember, I don't know why it stuck with me, but I had a customer at Schomburg Supplies, very positive lady, like uber positive, really. But she would always say, I'm doing perfect. And I just like, I don't know why it rubbed me the wrong way. Like, I
Like
mean,
perfect.
I guess if you say it over and over again, but perfect, I mean, I don't know. It sounds like you're kind of hiding something when you say you're doing perfect.
Yeah, that's a little suspicious. It's a little boastful. So I don't know about perfect.
It
But you
seems
know what? Great is a nice thing to say.
a little
For years I always did the standard, how you doing? I'm fine. I'm okay. But I
bit.
started saying I'm okay because I only feel okay. And I thought, well, people will take okay as okay, but people sometimes go, well, are you okay? What do you mean by okay? You know? So it's a bad habit I've gotten into looking for sympathy, I guess, but
It's
anyway.
a simple thing, really. I always used to say, I would always say, good, you. Like, I would just say, I'm good, you. Like, it would, like, immediately I'm like transferring, like, I'm good, you. And it was almost like a deflection because I think maybe I wasn't doing that good. And so I would kind of transfer that. But
That's
today,
what it is. And I do that. I know you know this. I will text you when I'm not doing good and say, hey, how are you doing? And you're like, well, how are you doing? But
it's true.
I also know I've caught myself when I'm in my bouts of, I have depression. People will ask me how I'm doing. And instead of saying fine, which is all I should say, I tell them. And they're sitting there. And if you ask me, of course, I should tell you how I'm doing. But if it's some guy that I see once every 2 years, it gives me my hamburger. Like, he's like, holy shit, man. I was just being
Too
polite.
much, too much information, John. Like, it's good to be honest, you know. We're taught to be honest for sure, but sometimes, yeah, it's more than people can kind of handle, I guess, at times, right? So,
It's true. He asked me what time it is, and I built him a watch, like it's just a little too much, so.
that's a good one. As in what time it is, and I build them a watch. I mean, if you can build a watch, man, I think you need to like switch careers. Like, you can move to Switzerland and become a watchmaker. That's kind of fun.
It's very, I didn't realize, I saw a show on it not long ago, believe it or not, and building watches is very hard to do, so.
Is, It's like, I feel like it's like a generational thing. Like your grandfather did it, and then you do it, and
My uncle
very.
Pimex used to do it. Used to
Very,
did.
very detailed, detail-oriented individual.
Yes. Yes. All right. So what's our topic this morning, good sir?
Well, we talked about it earlier in the week. We tried to prepare a little bit sooner. You had talked about hopes and dreams, and then I added goals. They kind of all fall into the same category. And I think we wanted to talk about goals that we've had in our lives. Goals that we set, how we sort of achieve them or move towards them, and then along with goals, hopes and dreams. So
Excellent.
I'll read the definition of all three to
Thank you.
start us off here. So the first one, a goal, it comes up as in football, soccer, rugby, hockey. It's on a pair of posts linked at a crossbar. Anyway,
Whoa.
we don't need to worry about those kind of goals. The goal that we're talking about is the object of a person's ambition or effort, an aim or desired result. So that's
Wow.
a good one. Hopes, a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen. That's a good one too. And then dreams, I mean, we know what dreams are, obviously, like a series of thoughts, images, and sensation occurring in a person's mind during sleep. But the other one is a cherished aspiration, ambition, or ideal. I fulfilled a childhood dream when I became a champion.
A cherished
What a cherished aspiration,
I like that.
Or ideal.
Cherished aspiration. I'm going to be a pain in the butt this morning. Could you read the second definition again?
Absolutely.
Hope.
Hope is a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen.
Okay.
Also a feeling of trust is what it says. Our private friendship upon hope and affiance whereof I presume to be your petitioner. I don't even really understand that, but a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen.
Well, that's a good definition.
It is. So do you want to start us off? I always like to go kind of back in time and think about what kind of goals I had when I was young. I don't
Absolutely.
Know. We don't always set goals when we're young, I guess, but we have certain hopes and dreams, I think, when we're younger. And
yeah, I wrote down a couple. These are going to sound frivolous, but I kind of thought about that pattern as well, about going back in the past. And I remembered I had two goals, hopes, and dreams as a young man for years and years.
Okay.
I wanted to be an architect.
Wow.
And I wanted to be a race car driver.
Wow. So
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
And that was not just like a passing, like, oh, I wanted to be those things. And I love speed to this day. I love watching race cars. I love driving fast. I basically lost my license for driving too fast. I fought to get it back, so I managed to not lose it, but I technically lost it. And we used to drag as teenagers. I had an old 77 Monte Carlo flat green.
Cool.
It bounced.
Yeah.
You could take the key out of it and it would still keep running. Like it was a tank. I think Dad paid $700 and it was so fast. And my buddy had a 77 Oldsmobile four screen. I shouldn't say too much. My people in my life might not know how much I did. So, but I used to just, I remember I drive, we were going three wide down a highway one time and this guy, I didn't really know, when we stopped, he goes, "Man, you can drive." And I said, "Well, it just never, I'm actually been a bit of a fraidy cat my whole life. Like, I got to tell you, I am. Like, I used to be scared to go in the basement. I was always scared of this, scared of that. I'm not Mr. Brave by any means. But I was never scared of speed. I just never. On my Harley, I mean, just faster and faster and faster. That's all I cared about.
Well, I guess, I mean, you know, overcoming fears, I think it's one of those things, if you embrace it, you know, if you have driven fast and you're good at it, let's just say, then you can overcome that fear. I mean, I like speed too. I'm not going to say I don't. And there were times where I drove a little faster than I do now. You know, I never, like, especially when I worked for Kingsdown, I would never be in the slow lane. Never.
No.
I mean, I've got places to go. I got things to do. If I'm on the highway, I'm doing 130. Like, I'm not doing 180, but I'm doing 130 with most people are driving that speed. But I'm not one to kind of dilly dally, let's say, in the slow lane. Like, that's not where you're going to find Chris Brogan
driving. I can't stand people driving slow. I can't stand it. I can't stand sitting in traffic. Like, if I have to spend 5 hours in the car, I don't have a problem with it. But if I'm sitting in traffic for five hours,
oh
I,
my God. Yeah.
I just cannot. I remember one time a friend of mine owned a Corvette and we were going from Pearl to Moncton. We weren't together. We just happened to be, he found out he was driving, he's a customer. He was driving at the same time.
Yeah.
And we got talking about, he goes, "I wish I could drive this thing. I wish I could open this up on the way home." I said, "Well, jump behind me, man." Because he was scared of getting a ticket. I said, "Let's go." So I have an F-150. I put it up to 160, and he drafted the whole way.
Wow. Right.
But and I always wanted, when I go across the border in the United States, first thing I do is take off the helmet. I can't,
Yeah.
I hate motorcycle helmets so much. Those laws are, I hate them. I hate them.
They are there for a reason, we'll say, but okay. I get it.
I mean, at the speed I'm driving on a highway, I think Jerry Seinfeld said this one time, the helmet's wearing me for protection at that point, really.
Yes, you know? Yes, that's
like,
true.
If I wipe out, the helmet's going to be, oh, thank goodness I was wearing that human, you know, I'm okay.
Exactly.
But it's not really going to help me.
No.
I came upon an accident years ago where a guy on a Harley got, it was a mess on it with a transport truck, and he was dead on arrival. I was the first one there, and that should have scared me straight, but it didn't really. But what I find, the only part I fear about speed is sometimes I would come home and I would think about what was going on. I'd think about, oh man, that corner was a little, you know, or if, you know, I think about what if my wheel came off or whatever. Now, I didn't, I don't do it if there's someone else in the car. Like, I won't. But anyway, that's, and then I always wanted to be an architect, and you mentioned Lego. I still like building Lego. It's immature, I know, but I always, my parents used to say, oh, you should, I used to design stuff. Like I always wanted to do it, but you know, my life went a different path. I was a young dad. And we all know that story. So I'm not going to do it again.
Yeah. Anyway. It's interesting. I don't think I knew that about you, but I can't remember when I wanted to be an architect, but I also wanted to be an architect. And I do think it does have something to do with building Lego. And I built a lot of models when I was a kid. I enjoyed doing that. And I always, because we traveled a lot when I was younger, I always had a real interest in buildings, in, you know, old buildings and historical buildings. And I always looked at them and thought, man, that's just so incredible that people built that. Like,
well,
especially
you're doing yard architecture now.
I am. And that is fulfilling for me, for sure. I do, you know, I have a lot of processes that I have to go through in order to change somebody's yard. And there are aspects of architecture, fences, decks, different things like that are interesting. But it's interesting that you bring that up, because early on in my sobriety, I met a guy who was in the program as well, and he was an architect. And I talked to him about it a bit, and he said, you know, Chris, it's never too late. It's, you know, it would take 5 years, but you know, you still have time. Who knows? I could be here for 30 more years, 5 years of that. It's not that much time. And ultimately, I mean, I think about it, if I were to do it, yeah, I would love to design homes. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I could start designing buildings or things, but I have a certain style of home. I like modern homes. I like cottages. It's, you know, it has a lot to do, I think, with the surrounding and fitting a building in into a surrounding or just like environmentally friendly buildings and things like that.
Yes.
So I don't know. It's been on my mind for a long time. It's interesting that you say it. So it is kind of a dream, I think, of mine. And
well,
I feel
and
like
I even like. Like, I haven't got the money, but even Chanda used to come home after work and wonder where the furniture was going to be. I was always trying to design inside the house, like find different ways to put things, you know, and move things. And maybe we can do it together, and we can be S&C architectures in 5 years. You know, that would be a podcast people might watch.
It would. And I, you know, when we, as we're talking about dreams and hopes and goals, I went through them, and I don't know, at some point, and I don't know, for a while, I think I kind of blame my parents. I think when we get older, if certain things don't come true in our lives, we tend to blame our parents for not kind of, I don't know, pushing us in a direction. My mom always wanted me to be a lawyer. She just always said, oh, you should be a lawyer. I wish you were a lawyer. And it, I don't know why, like I wasn't an argumentative kid or anything like that. I don't know. I think it was just the, you know, just as a mom, like she didn't want me to be a doctor, which a lot of parents I think do. But she wanted me to be a lawyer. I remember taking criminology at university. It was fun. I enjoyed it. But I think, and going back to like, you know, your parents, my parents, like, they literally kind of, they gave me everything I wanted. Like they just, if I wanted something, they gave it to me. They didn't kind of like say, well, you know, if you want a car, you need to get a job, save money. They would just buy me a car. And I kind of like, I feel like it, 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 jaded me in a way that I didn't have a lot of goals when I was a kid. I floated along, and we talked about it on a previous podcast that when we were talking about what were we talking about? Well, we were talking about times in our lives, like when we had difficulties, highs and lows. And there was a time after high school when I went to university, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't have goals. I couldn't decide what I wanted to do for a career. And I think people that do know that when they're young, I think, man, that's such a gift. Like to be able to know what you want, go to school for it and do it. And that is a gift. Like that's special. Like, and who knows, over time it can change. Of course, maybe you set a goal to become a doctor and maybe you don't love it. And then you change and you end up doing something else. I think that's probably a bad example because I think most doctors stick to being a doctor.
I've got a doctor who was, he was a lawyer for years and then became a doctor.
Like, wow. Yeah.
And they say you should change your career like four or five times to be happy in life. Like,
yeah.
I agree with that statement. And you were talking about parents. Like, my parents, dad gave me everything I needed in high school, but to a fault. Like, and yeah. I think he did it out of, we lived in the city. I loved my neighborhood. My friends lived there. I was starting high school. My dad said he wanted to move to the country. And that's a long story. But he told me, I won't do it until you graduate. I promise. I won't take you to the city away from your friends and all that. Mm-hmm. Well, 2 months later, the house was for sale. And away we went.
Yeah.
He decided to build a house. We moved out of our house in June. We moved into this new house December 23rd. We were living like pack rats. Like I was at my grandmother's. We were at the cottage. It was awful. We were at my uncle's. Dad just stayed away completely. He just left me and mom on our own. He was traveling. But anyway, then I think out of almost like guilt, he knew I had to travel to town. So he gave me a car and he gave me a gas card. And, you know, my friends were always like, oh, you're spoiled. You're spoiled. But I didn't feel spoiled. It felt like, I don't know. It was never spoiled. And I found my dad and mom never really pushed me to be anything. Now, I told you last podcast, I always wanted to be like my dad. But my dad gave me a job when I was 19 because my girlfriend was pregnant and I was getting married. Mm-hmm. And he just basically, you know, told me even in high school I could go work for him. My grades were okay, but I wasn't going to school. But I found out after that wasn't for me. And I'm not just saying that. It wasn't for me. It was for him, like because he didn't want to work. So after about 2 years, he started laying more and more on me. And came up with these cockamamie plans that he was going to retire and I was going to pay him out. And it was just, my mom would sit there and go, what are you talking about? It was just foolishness. And my life got very convoluted. But I was always, so that's the blame I'll put on him. And that's a long, long story, which we'll hopefully talk about in other podcasts. But my blame is I was always in a hurry. There's an old Alabama song, I'm in a hurry to get things done. I rush, and I don't know why. Like, I felt like, you know, I was in love with my girlfriend. I wanted to get married even before she was pregnant. And then she got pregnant. I was like, okay, well, you're pregnant. Okay, well, now we're going to have another kid. Now I'm going to work with my dad. And, you know, by the time I was 25, I'd led more of a life than most people have done by the time they're 45, you know?
Right.
And I see my children now. I'm house sitting this week and my younger children are in Paris and England having the time of their lives.
Right.
And I'm jealous of them. I'm happy for them, of course, but jealous. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never been to Europe. I know you were born in Europe, but I've never been there. I've always wanted to go, but I was kind of busy being a dad and trying to figure out who I was. And I really struggled with this podcast this week because I've thought about this a lot, not just this week. I've thought about this for years. Mm-hmm. Is I really don't have an identity. I don't know. I really, Chris, I mean this. I don't know who I am. I don't know who I was supposed to be. I don't know who I wanted to be.
Yeah.
I knew I had to take care of my family, love my family. But I had a lot of pressure, what my dad wanted, what I had to do for my family, what other people wanted. Once I started working for companies, and as an agent, I worked for all kinds of different companies, and I was always trying to please everybody. And I had, so people would say, oh, you haven't got a direct boss. I said, no, I've got 100 bosses or 1,000 bosses, every retail person, you know. And then I was driving my Harley, which I enjoy, but I was trying to be like my dad. And I just woke up one day and I just realized, like, I have no idea who the fuck I am. I have no idea, no idea. And I, to this day, I don't, I really don't.
I'll just touch on that in a second. Cause I think from the outside looking in, maybe it's different, you know, how you see yourself versus how the rest of the world sees you. But I think going back to parents and you know, ambitions, I think one of the things that when you're sort of given the things that you ask for, it creates an environment where you're not very ambitious. I think, you know, I just kind of coasted along, you know, for a while until I had to kind of make it on my own. But even then, I always knew that I had a bit of a fail safe with my parents, that if I needed something, they would probably give it to me. Like, you know, was I spoiled? Probably. I think I was. I was the oldest in the family, so I was the firstborn. You know, I think that I probably was given more than, say, my sister was or my brother. By the time it got to them, maybe my parents had kind of changed their philosophies on that. But I kind of always had this feeling of a security blanket, and it took a long time for me to kind of let go of that blanket. And there's a certain, you know, there's a certain, it's just, it can hold you back. Like, when you really don't have to make it on your own, you're kind of like, you know, it's like leaving the nest. Like, you know, I always just felt like I could just go back to the nest. And I think for me, you know, I had some resentments about that when I looked at them, really, like in the last few years, I had resentments towards my parents for that. I think that, you know, when a parent kind of really parents instead of kind of just really takes care of, what they should be doing is really guiding their kids to get out on their own, to figure out who they are and to make their own way in the world. And I'm not saying I didn't do that, but for a long time, I think I lived under the blanket of my dad. My dad was a powerful guy. He was tall. He had a charisma to him. He was in sales, of course, like your dad was. So I kind of followed suit, right? I followed along in his footsteps for a while, in his shadow in a lot of ways. But yeah, I mean, when we bought the business, yeah, he was my boss. We talked about this. He was my boss. I was my brother's boss. And there was a certain dynamic to that that was okay. I started to have my own freedoms and my own decision making, but it was always under this, like, well, as long as my dad's okay with it, it's okay. If he disagrees, he's just going to veto whatever I'm doing. And yeah, you can't change your past, of course. Yeah, I would have probably done things differently if I had have been, you know, if I had kind of more of that, just incentive, like to be driven. I feel like I've never really been overly driven. I've gotten the job done. I've worked hard in my life. I take great pride in working hard. I do. But it's really, again, only in the last few years that I've kind of made decisions to really change the course of my life. I mean, I made a significant one when I quit Kingsdown. That was for me, that was a big deal. You know, I mean, I'm working with a good friend of mine who I've known most of my life, and now I got to tell him I'm quitting. That was hard, man. Yeah, he knew it was coming. He could tell. I was half-assing it. Nobody, you know, you're often the last one to know that you're half-assing it, because everybody else pretty much knows, right? Right. I hated it at the end. I hated all the bureaucracy, all the changes that were going on. I think one of the things that can cause change, and maybe, you know, can help with defining goals or changing goals, changing the course of your life, is when you get into a place that you really don't want to be in anymore. And though it's unfortunate that it's kind of becomes like a, it's almost catastrophizing it. Like you have to get to this really bad place before you can like change. And so I did, I set a goal of taking a, you know, a landscaping design course. I did that. I completed the course. I knew a lot of aspects of that already, but I was very, it was a big goal. It was, I mean, it wasn't a big goal, but it was a goal that I was happy to complete and change the course of my career, which, as you said, you know, you do that a few times in your life. But just going back to you not knowing who you are, I mean, there are always things that just kind of define who you are because of the things that you've done in your life. And I think anybody on the outside looking in would say Sean is a, he's a solid human being. He works hard. He's a salesman. He is a family man. He's a husband. So, you know, I think maybe when you're talking about, you know, not knowing who you are, maybe it has to do with your career, or I don't know. I mean, you have talked recently, of course, about getting into, you know, the sort of the field of, I guess, therapy or, yeah. You know, so I can tell that is a dream, I think, but maybe a goal. I mean, I think you've talked about kind of moving towards that. I know that you're setting up your meeting is coming up soon, and that you are, you know, these are little goals that you're setting for yourself to kind of hopefully as a stepping stone towards kind of maybe moving in a different direction in your life.
I think so. I hope so. I think, as you know, I live with so much guilt, and I always, I'm not saying I wasn't a good husband, but I always feel bad for my wife because she married a child. Like I was a child, and yeah. I was a little spoiled. I was way too influenced by my parents. I put way too much attention on my parents, mm-hmm. and that all blew up in my face. I mean, mm-hmm. who my parents were, not who I thought they were. My dad kind of betrayed us all. My mom left us. And I used to feel that security kind of like, well, I always had my parents, you know. And then all of a sudden I didn't. My dad, yeah. My mom is gone.
Yeah.
My dad went and started another family. They got five little girls. I mean, I more chance I'd have to take care of him than him take care of me, you know. And I've just been responsible a long time for a lot of people, and that's okay. Okay? And I felt like I did push my kids to, they both went to university and they're both doing very well. I'm not sure they give me any credit for that. I think they did it completely on their own. I think they should give their mom a little more credit, but that doesn't matter. I'm just happy they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to, just so I don't get on down a, too far down a rabbit hole, I want to just touch on what you just said, because one of the goals I have set since COVID was getting Life Ring going again in Moncton. I started Life Ring a few years ago in Moncton. It's for addiction. It's for all kinds of addiction. It's kind of an option to the AAGANA programs, which are fantastic programs. You know, I think a lot of those programs, but it's a non-secular program, and it just says there's a little more crosstalk. It's a little different way of doing things.
Yeah.
But I had tremendous success, tremendous success. And I was helping some real therapists at the mental health addiction center. I was going to the rehab. I won a Community Star Award for it. I was really proud of it. But then COVID shut it down and my health shut it down, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about restarting it for a while, but I've been scared. I'm not sure I have it in me anymore. I'm not the man I was back then, but I finally decided to go ahead. So I'm starting June 4th at 6 p.m. in room 176. So,
awesome. That's great.
And I've gotten some people already excited about it. So I am scared, but I'm also excited. And I think I need it in my life. My life and my wife's life has been, you know, I won't say ruined, but addiction has done a real number on us, and it's all my addiction. She doesn't have any addictions.
Yeah.
Maybe she's addicted to me. I don't know, but
that's
a bad one. That's a bad one.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy. That's a goal I set that looks like I'm going to achieve it. I've had some help with you know, the government people helping me get a set up a room and a space, and they're helping me advertise it. So, you know, you don't get anything without a little bit of help for sure.
Yeah.
But the last thing, and I'm gonna let you talk. I was thinking about what we were talking about though, about a little bit being spoiled. And what happened to me is I never had any respect for money. My dad never had any respect for money. He would make tons of money, he'd spend it all. And then he wouldn't have any, and we wouldn't have any. And he'd make tons and he'd spend it all. And when you work in our job as agents, like you can have a month where you make $15,000. The next month you made $20, you know, like it's so up and down. And a normal, smart human being would budget that and say, okay, here's my yearly income, and here's how I have to live. Not go buy a new Harley, not go trade trucks, not take the kids to a NASCAR race. But you know, I was just like my dad. It was, and I made good money for not that long. It was actually just a few years, couple that I made good money on my own. But I thought it would last forever. And my mental health took away part of it. My addiction took away a lot of it. And then just the world took away. I lost the line because they went online, and they it was a big part of my income. So, you know, I've struggled with bankruptcies. I've struggled. We're still struggling, and I'm trapped once again. I'm always trapped. I'm trapped by debts. And anyway, that's it.
Well, I mean, I think we have a lot of things in common. I think my dad. Always, he was the same. He spent money. He would buy drinks. He would do this. He would do that. He would, you know, he was constantly like, you know, he was borrowing from Peter to pay Paul at times in his life, and he stressed about money like most of his life. It was just like he was constantly under stress. And at times, he made good money. We lived in a big house. We, you know, we went on vacations. We did all these things, but it gets passed along. You know, it gets passed along. And there have certainly been times in my life where I had good security with my income. It was consistent when we owned the business. You know, I paid myself a salary, and it got bigger and bigger every year. But I, you know, and I put money away. I did. We bought houses. We did the things that we've done, and you did too, of course. And we went on vacations, and we did things. But I kind of had this like, I didn't really care about the future that much. It was kind of like I lived a lot in the present. I like just, you know, if I wanted something, I bought it. I didn't. Yeah, budgeting. Man, I've just been terrible at that my whole life. Like. Putting money away for retirement and investments, like just like I did some of it, but really not the way you're supposed to. You know, my brother-in-law, his parents, they taught him like you put away 25 cents of every dollar you make. Wow. And I thought, what? Like never. I've never done that. I mean, it's a great rule. And his parents taught him that, and he does it. Like my parents just not. There was nothing there. And I don't, what are you gonna do? Like I'm not blaming them, honestly. Like I'm not gonna go back in time and say they should have done a better job. But my parents, honestly, they were kind of kids too. Like they my mom, you know, she's a wonderful, beautiful woman, but she just like, she really didn't teach me like values. Like she didn't. We talked about one of the shows where she taught me that lying was okay. My dad, he led by example, but the examples that he led with weren't great. And the bottom line is I'm a lot like him. And sometimes like, you know, you grow up, you look at your parents and you're like, yeah, you know, I want to be like my dad, until you don't. And then you realize like all these things that they're not doing right. And you're like, okay, no, I'm not going to be like my dad. I'm not. But yet there are definitely lots of characteristics that I have that are just like my dad. And I'm not going to lie. Like my dad's not here to hear me say this, but when my dad passed away, there was a certain amount of relief. I got to be honest. Like he was a stressful person. He was a stressful person to be around. I mean, we golfed together for years and years and years. I loved him. I loved golfing with him, but he was stressful even on the golf course. Like he had this stress about him. And you know, you said about Shonda marrying a kid. You know, I think as men, we have certain traits, certain aspects to us that we want to provide. We want to provide security for the people around us. We want to be a good example. We want to be a good dad. We want to be a good friend to our friends. We want to be a good partner to our wives. And a lot of men, including myself, it takes a long time to grow up somehow. It does. Like you get busy doing, you're just doing, but you're not really being, like, you're not identifying who you are really. Like, you're not really delving into what it is that, you know, really makes you tick as a career. Probably you don't, I think a lot of men struggle, and this is why we're doing this podcast. Like, a lot of men struggle with their emotions. You know, it's really, I think, as far as like my emotional age, like versus my physical age, I think about that sometimes. Like, I often think my emotional age, I could easily be like in my 20s. Like, honestly, like, I'm 55. I've been addressing it more lately. It's just been a slow process. I've been doing therapy. Getting sober, of course, was a huge part of becoming more emotionally strong. I'm more honest now. I am more emotional now. I think for a while I was on like emotional autopilot. I really just, like, I didn't cry. I didn't do, you know, stiff upper lip, British, all that stuff. It's bullshit. It's fucking bullshit until you get right down to it and you start really addressing the things that we're talking about, the resentments that we have for our parents, the things that we didn't learn. But at some point you got to say to yourself, and this is a Tracyism, I'm a big boy now. Like, I'm 55 fucking years old, and I have to do the work. I have to address these things. And, you know, we're talking about goals here today. My goals now are daily. They're daily goals, and they're simple things, but they're things that they make me a better person every day. That, you know, praying, meditating, eating well, exercising, talking to people, being open, being honest, community, communication, talking to you, doing a podcast. You know, these are the goals, the daily things that I set for myself now that I think I live, like we've talked about this. I really don't live in the past anymore. I don't live in the future. I live in the now. I really do. And I think that is a huge, huge light bulb for me to live like that. That now, to not have the fear, because we talked, I think you had fear on for the topic, and honestly I nixed that one because I wouldn't have been able to come up with a podcast for that. Like, of course I could talk about fears that I've had, but they're in the past now. They're not daily fears. I'm not even scared of dying anymore, to be honest with you. If I die today, Sean, I mean, I know that your podcast won't be as good, of course, without me. But man, I've had a great life, and I have no complaints anymore. I don't. I really don't. I know I'm complaining a little bit about my parents, but we're just talking about it. So I'm going on here a bit. But
I'm not scared of dying. I unfortunately sometimes hope for it.
I
said fear because I do live in fear. I was thinking about what we talk about. I've been in survival mode my whole life. My parents weren't just acting like kids. My parents were kids. They had me when they were 18, and my sister was only 2 years old, man.
Right.
They were kids.
They were kids.
My mom got pregnant when she was 15. But you know, they're your parents, so you look up to them. And I did want to be like my dad. I got in this business, and my dad was a legend. Everyone was like, "Oh, your father! Oh, your father! Your father!" Everyone loved him. Like, I just watched women love him, men loved him, and respected him. And I thought, And even though Dad wasn't that great of worker, he was a good salesman, and he had charm up the yin yang, and you know, his charm gave him a career. But his charm cost him his family, you know, because he couldn't turn it off. He cheated on my mom, and you know, death of a salesman, that was my life.
Yeah.
I thought my dad was a fucking hero.
Yeah.
And then he wasn't. And I don't know where you get the audacity to be a really infidelity man, and then bring your son into that life where everybody knows it, and bring me in rooms with women you have cheated with my mother, and bring them into my life. And that's a lot to throw on a kid when he finds out. Yeah. And I remember Al Taylor, who I consider a good friend. I remember one time he said something like, "Oh, well, you know, your dad, he this," and someone said this. And I'm looking at these people like, you guys are out of your fucking mind. This is my father and my mother. Yeah. Like, it cost my mother her life.
Yeah.
And you guys talk about it like it's just like, not. You made a fool out of my mom. He made a fool out of her. He took her whole life and made it a joke.
Yeah.
And I've been faithful to my wife for 35 years. I would never. We made a deal, and I know it's not. Fuck, I'm not on a high horse, but we told each other forever. And I was a jealous man growing up. I was. Mm-hmm. I had a very hot young wife, but we always said to each other we would never cheat on each other. If we wanted to leave, we would tell the person we were leaving, and we would leave. But no bullshit. And my wife had to live with the fact that she knew my father was a cheater, and I was out there hanging around. And my whole industry was like that. Yeah. I'm not saying people close to me. I'm not insinuating anything, but it's just, dad used to travel with salesmen. They all traveled every night to the same city. I mean, I'm talking about when I was a young man, four kings down. And, you know, it was just a culture.
Yeah. That's a boys club. Yeah.
Right. But there was a family at home, you know? And I watched my mom just cook dinner after dinner, and dad does not show up. And when he did show up, he was drunk, you know?
Yeah.
And his mom didn't like animals, and he'd show up with three dogs and cats, and then he would go away and leave her in charge of them. And she didn't want to be in charge with them, you know? And anyway, I'm getting off track. But so just to stick on track to this, because I know we can talk about other things. I do still live in fear, unfortunately. I know you see cars, they have these stickers on them that say no fear. You ever see those?
Yeah,
no fear.
Of course,
I want to start a company that says scared shitless and put them on sell stickers.
Tons of fear.
Yeah, that's me, man. Scared shitless. But so along those goals, because I know we can't talk all day, I tried to put on my biggest goal. My biggest goal, like I've got in there, you know, I want to get a Harley again someday. It'll probably have to be a trike because of my feet, but still, weight loss. I've lost 140 pounds, but I have a goal to just once in my life, and I've seen you do it. I'm always jealous. I want to go to the beach with no shirt on just once.
Yeah.
I'm sick of swimming in a t-shirt. I'm so sick of being embarrassed. I think because I was so big, I'm going to need surgery. You know, because I've got too much loose skin. But anyway, I hopefully maybe one day I can afford that so I can feel like a normal person. I want to be addiction free. That's a big goal of mine. But all this leads up to one thing that I've always put in one. This is my goal in this way for a long time.
Yeah.
Peace of mind.
Yeah.
I want to wake up one morning and not feel like my whole world is crashing down around me, that the IRS isn't calling, that.
Yeah.
I'm screwing up my kid's life, that I'm not pleasing kings down, or there's some customer not happy, or I've let down a friend, or I feel terrible. Like my health is so bad. And I know you've been taking care of yourself. I've been doing better, but I still got a long way to go. And I just want to wake up one day before I die, and just my eyes open, and not within 30 seconds, be scared shitless.
Honestly, it's
peace of mind.
It's, and you've told me that before, you can get it. Of course you can, but it is a process. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to take time. It's going to take therapy. It's going to take, you know, it's going to take treating yourself right, doing the next right thing. But it's interesting because I think when we're younger, not for everybody, but of course, when we're younger, you know, goals are often material possessions. And I think the older you get, the more you realize all that stuff is just shit. It doesn't matter. Of course you want a house and you want your house to be nice. And it's nice to drive a nice car. And these are all things that can be goals. But, you know, to say that peace of mind is your goal, man, that if any, if, anyone can take anything away from this podcast today, man, that is a, that's a brilliant statement. And it's a brilliant philosophy to want that. Like that is, that's what life is all about, man. That is the goal. Like that is like when I read about Buddhism and these different practices, it's about enlightenment. It's about getting to a place where you're enlightened. And enlightenment by definition is you feel light. You don't feel heavy anymore. You're just light. You're just like, you've got a halo on your forehead and you're floating around like the world is your oyster. You look outside the window, you see miracles outside. You see birds, you hear birds chirping. You say hi to people. You just like, life is light. And that is like, that is a one, like what a goal. What a goal. Like I'm just, I love that, man. Peace of mind is the goal that everyone on the planet should have, because if we all had peace of mind, man, the world would be a beautiful, miraculous, loving place.
I want to know what it feels like. I mean that. Anyway, I said it already. I'm tired of being scared, but I, you know, my wife and I are in a funny spot because we were parents at 19, and all we had, whether we wanted to or not, we had to take care of our children, and we did.
Yeah.
And it wasn't always the best, wasn't always the greatest, but we did. Mm-hmm. And Shonda, she should have been mother of the millennium. And I'm not just saying that. Unbelievable. But what happens is, you just said you're 55. I'm 54. How did that happen?
Yeah. And
now I'm 54. I'm sitting in my son's house. He's in Paris with his wife. My other son is doing yard work in the home he just bought with his wife down in Halifax. And they're grown up and in their 30s, and we're not parents anymore. So all we were was we were parents.
For sure.
And then all of a sudden, of course, we're still parents. I'm still helping out. But my everyday life, who am I? What am I? Like, talk about empty nest syndrome. I didn't know that was such a real thing, but it has hit us like a truck, and we have not been able to recover from it. And I think something that Shonda and I have to work on, besides all my demons and problems, is I think we have to get on the same page. I think we're not on the same page, and I think she knows that. I'm not, I obviously wouldn't say that, but it wasn't comfortable with her hearing it.
Sure.
But we're on the same page about a lot of stuff. We love each other, which conquers a lot.
Yeah.
But it doesn't conquer all. That old saying, it doesn't conquer all.
No.
It conquers a lot.
No. Being in a partnership, being in a relationship for as long as you have, I mean, communication is obviously essential. You know, for a while, you know, I know both of us, we were living our most honest life. There's no question about it. Today, I do that. But there's always, you know, people have different ideas. Like, it's trying to find that middle ground where you're both happy with you know, your decisions. And I mean, being a parent, you know, you're just, that's your number one priority. It's all you're doing. Like, you're just making sure your kids are okay. And then once they are okay, you find yourself in a place where maybe you're like, okay, now what? Right.
Mm.
But, you know, like you said, times change, careers change, these things change. I know that you're thinking a lot about helping others. And I think that that is clearly something for me. I know if I'm thinking about something over and over and over again, I know it's something that I need to do. There's a reason, of course. And I think, you know, when you talk about peace of mind, just going back to that, I mean, I know that we talked about recommending books or different things. Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, is a book that I think everyone on the planet should read, because you don't have to find peace of mind for later today. You just have to find peace of mind right now, like right in this moment, to just have, like, just get rid of all the stuff that you're thinking about, all the, you know, the bills and all the shit, like all the other stuff that everybody has to deal with. Eventually that stuff just goes away anyway. I mean, when you die, it's all gone anyway. It doesn't really matter. It's just we're all just like a grain of sand in the Sahara Desert. When you look at the universe, like, what does it really matter? Any of that shit, right? Peace of mind comes from just being happy with who you are in this moment right now. Like, I'm good with who I am. I think you're good with who you are in this moment right now. When you just think about what it is that you're doing, what you're talking about, who you are, who you've become, all the great things that you've done, you know, focusing on the negative stuff, it just doesn't, it's not going to serve you anymore. And then I know you know that. It's just, it becomes like, it's a mantra. It's just, for me now, it's a mantra to just be happy to be who I am in the now. You know, I've done the best I could. We talk about our parents. They did the best they could. At the end of the day, you know, could they have been different? Sure. You know, you were talking about your dad, and I felt the same way at times. People were like, oh man, your dad's so smart and he's all this and he's all that. And I feel like saying, yeah, but you don't live with him. You don't live with him. You don't, you're not at home when he comes home, same as your dad, when he comes home half drunk and starts having an argument with my mom at the table and then lights up a cigarette while we're all having dinner. You don't live in that. I do. So, yeah, you don't know shit until you walked a mile in somebody else's shoes. You just don't, right? We all have traumas. We all have shit. But dealing with them is the biggest thing. That's the only way that you get peace of mind. It's the only way.
I've got to get back. I was doing therapy and it was helping. I took a hit in my income and I had to cancel it, but I got to figure a way to get it back.
It's huge. But
yeah, it's funny you saying that. Like, I remember all my cousins were Uncle Bobby, you're so lucky. Your Uncle Bobby. Yeah. He's a good uncle.
Yeah.
And all my friends, oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky. And I just remember I started listening to them and I go, yeah, I guess I'm lucky. I don't know. I don't feel so lucky sometimes, but I did. I'm glad you said what you said. I know we're probably should be wrapping up. I never know how long this is. It probably says somewhere, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I did want to add a recommendation. So every week I thought maybe you and I could recommend something. It sounds like you already did, but I'd like you to repeat it because I think it's an important one.
Yeah. Eckhart Tolle. He's a spiritual advisor. Basically, he went through a midlife crisis. He basically gave up everything he had. He got to the point where he was kind of talking to himself in the third person, and he hated who he was so much that he knew there was not, he couldn't even go forward anymore. He had to completely change who he was. He ends up writing several books. He's a best-selling author, you know, number one New York Times months, years. He's been on Oprah Winfrey. Like, he is world-renowned. Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. It's all about just living in the now, getting rid of the past, forget the future. The saying in AA, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, today is the present. That's why they call it a gift. It's so true. It is so true. So Eckhart Tolle, Power of Now, wonderful, wonderful book. It's well written. It's a slightly complex concept, I guess, but he writes it in a way where people are like asking him questions within the book and then he answers the questions. It's a game changer, 100%.
Well, that's awesome. I hope people check it out.
You too.
Mine is a letter from a Penthouse forum back in 19. No, I'm kidding. You know what? Most people won't even know what that is anymore. So
no, it's true. No,
mine's not quite as deep, but it's. I was going to recommend a couple books, and I'll do that on future episodes. Mine's actually a television show on Netflix called Dope Sick.
Okay.
I believe it's on Netflix. I should have checked that. But anyway, if you search Dope Sick, you will find it. It stars Michael Keaton.
D-O-P.
A lot of good people.
Dope Sick. Yeah.
Dope Sick.
Yeah.
And it's all about the opiate crisis in North America. This one's technically America, but in Canada was the same thing.
Sure.
It's about the Sackler family. The lies they told, the lives they've ruined, millions dead, millions affected. I'm being one of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had their names on museums and universities and buildings while people were dying. Anyway, they lost. Their names got taken off the buildings. Their respect got taken away. They were fined $10 billion, but they made $20 billion.
Right. So
they still walked away with $10 billion. Okay. Well, my life has been totally ruined by them. And I am probably one of the luckier ones.
Yeah.
So this is a very good depiction of it. It shows it from a lot of different angles. Michael Keaton plays a doctor and there's a twist I won't say, but anyway, if anyone gets a chance to watch it, Dope Sick is fantastic. My wife watched it with me, but struggled because she connected from the other side a little too much and made her cry a couple times and upset her. But
yeah.
anyway, very good show. So,
well, yeah, that's, I mean, it's great. I can't help but say, when you say your life was ruined, I think your life has been transformed because you've kicked your addiction. So, I mean, I love you, man, but your life was hard and difficult for many years because of your addiction, but it's so much better now that you're sober, man. Like, you kicked it, and that's a goal that a lot of people have, and you've done it. So that you should be so proud of yourself, man. And you know, and just if I'm
for you, that means a lot, man, because you kicked one too, and
I did, and it's a game changer, and it's a lot of people's goal to not be addicted to a substance. There's no question about it. People do it. They continue to do it. They're hiding.
I still do it. I'm still dealing with all kinds of addictions. I still vape. I still drink coffee. I've had gambling, drugs. The only one with me was booze, because booze didn't agree with me. And I think because my dad was an alcoholic, I've never had an alcohol problem. But I heard something the other day. They said, if you don't have an addiction before the age of 25, you probably never will. Yeah. And that describes my wife to a T. She'd never had one.
Yeah.
And I started smoking when I was 15 years old and started having a Coke every morning. You know, I was blah, 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 blah. Just, that's all I was. If I see something once, I'm an addict. If I try it once, I'm an addict. I just, it's not an excuse. It's just,
I mean, everything I read about addiction, again, it generally speaking goes back to trauma from your childhood. Those are the reasons people get addicted. They do. They're looking for an escape. They're looking for a way out. They're looking for a way to not deal with the things that they've, you know, but nobody gets out alive, as they say. We all have trauma. Like, it's how you address it. You know, if we're getting close to the end here, my goals today, I've often had goals around travel. I like to travel. I like to look forward to going on a trip. I really do. When I start planning it and it starts getting into motion, I really get excited about that. I am planning a trip out east this summer. So we will be doing a podcast in your house.
That would be awesome.
I've already started. I'm getting ready to book a couple things. So we will be doing that. That is a goal of mine. My goal is for today. My goal is to be sober today. My goal is to be a good person. My goal is to do my best for today, man. And, you know, that's all I can do. That's all I can do, man.
That's a good goal. I'll try to reflect the same. My goal is just to get through another one, man, but that's okay. It's
one day. You're right.
Last thing I want to say is, you said that when I'm on these podcasts, I'm happy, but I am. And I think that's connection. We need connection. Anyone that thinks, I'm losing my voice, anyone that thinks you can do this on your own, you can't.
No chance.
You can't do it from the day we're born. You take a deer, they might be able to survive on their own as soon as they're born, or a turtle, but a fish, shark. Humans, if they don't have their mom and a community, they die.
Absolutely, that's, man. It. Absolutely.
And that never changes. We are the same way our whole lives. I think if we don't have someone, we die in one way or the other. And
connection is absolutely critical, but connection with people that you really, respect, people that lift you up. You know, we can be connected to people in our lives that really, like, they're not good for us. And I know at times I have connections with people that I liked but whether they were drinking buddies or things, like, they just kind of perpetuated certain characteristics of myself. I mean, I'm trying again to build new relationships all the time. But connection with people that you love and respect that lift you up, that's so important too, man. Like,
it is.
It's so important.
I need it back. I have isolated myself for a few years I've got to stop it. Of course, my job gets me out talking to people, but I'm talking about mattresses, and I like talking about mattresses. It's fine. Yeah. But it's not, you know what I mean? It's not real connection. We actually get in trouble for doing that. We're told that don't go in the stores and just talk about nothing. Talk about product. Talk about, you know. All right. Namaste.
Yeah. To me, I think that the connections that you're looking for are you know, people that you can support, that you can help. And I'm super excited for you for this Life Ring group that's coming up next week, I guess.
Yeah, next Tuesday. Sounds
like that's something that's really lifting you up. And that those are the things that, you know, when you start to do them again, you realize how important they are. And so I think that's a wonderful goal. I think you're getting there, and it's going to feel amazing when you start doing it. I think it might change your life, to be honest. I think that when I hear you talking over the last few years, getting into counseling, getting, you know, taking some courses, doing some things to move towards that, I think that would be very, very gratifying for you. And I feel like you would get a lot more peace of mind.
I think so too.
In doing that. I know that you're helping I know you're helping people in your sales role. I know you do. Like, you're a great salesman. You're good at what you do. You're convincing, you're honest, you're open. I know that you've helped thousands of people. You helped me at the beginning when we first met. We talk about that meeting at Mike's cottage. I thought, man, this guy's awesome. Like, he just knows what he's doing. He's a big guy. He's tall. He's smart. Like, he's got charisma. And I know you don't think that about yourself, but I'm telling you, man, from the outside looking in, people see it. So, you know,
you keep saying it. Hopefully I believe it one of these days, but I appreciate it.
I know you do.
I want it. The last goal I'm going to read.
Yeah.
It goes along with what you said.
Yeah.
Was I have a goal of getting my reputation and my respect and some of that you're talking about. I feel like I've lost that or I've given it away, and I want to try to get some of that back. So we'll see. Like, it's a lot. I realized as I was writing this stuff down, like, okay, just try to get through the day here. I got to work today. I got stuff to do. So,
you know what? I'm a firm believer in if you believe in it, you'll do it. You know, I really do. I think the world is a wonderful thing, and that we do know that if you set your mind to something, man, so many people have done so many incredible things.
Worse off than you.
The sky's the limit. Like, we've made it this far. We've done great things in our lives. Surviving the world is a goal, for God's sakes. Like, it's
absolutely.
So, you know, a lot of people don't. And so here we are today. We're doing our podcast. We're making shit happen. You're spreading the good word, man. We're spreading the fact that peace of mind is something that we should all be striving for, brother. So
you're right. Well, thanks again, man. I really, really enjoyed this one. I always look forward to seeing you. So you have a great day.
It was a great one, man. It was kind of light, but it was fun. We had some laughs, and I think I think there was a good message conveyed, and I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
All right. I love you, man.
I love you too, brother. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Peace of mind. See you, brother.
See ya.